I'm Brenda Walsh. I'm studying pre-law, pre-med, and pre-menstrual. I'm not really sure which one.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 5, Radio Days. Not the usual spelling, guys. They change it up. It's
they
all
what?
Like with a Z.
What?
Now, here your host, Tari Ariane, Sarah Dibon.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. I'm radio dazed. How about you?
Same. Radio dazed by the somehow five plot lines in this episode. Let's get to it so that we can put it behind us. By the way, before we start, there are 40 images in the visual aids for this one. If you can motherfucking believe it.
I can, because like 32 of them are me like drawing giant arrows towards everything about Andrea's attire, because it just keeps
it's true it doesn't stop. But we'll get to it. So the first thing you need to know is we're only now, this is episode 5 of the season, to the first day of classes. They have gotten up to so much bullshit before stuff has even started. It's ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, our E-plot, Brenda is the worst at job. So Dylan and Brenda meet up in their fucking poetry class, barf, where she's looking at classified ads because all of a sudden she thinks she should get a job. She looks terrible, by the way.
Let me just break in here and say, I believe their instructor's name is Dr. Petty.
Yes.
Which is perfect.
Yep. not Tom Petty, alas. A note just about this, because you can see it in the visual aids, but Brenda, or really Shannon Doherty, looks so bad in the scene. They have put her in this dress, this floral dress, which is, first of all, not her style at all. It's like one of those, I sent a shot of it to Sarah when I was watching the episode, and she was like, buttons down the front? Like, yep, it's a mid-calf floral, like, sub-Laura Ashley thing. But it's like the background color of it is this ivory that is terrible with her skin color. She's so pale. Her eyebrows are still crazy. And her hair looks completely slack, like she has it wrapped around her shoulder, but it's like so flat. She just looks awful. I really feel bad for her. They must have already started hating her guts. Anyway, so her first stop on the job hunt is she goes to quote Maxwell's unquote, which is supposed to be where Celeste works, except even in the B-roll you can see that it's Fred Siegel on Melrose because the bottom of the Fred Siegel sign is visible, so whatever. You can see that in the visual aids, too. Brenda's interview was fine, she tells Celeste, but there's a lot of interest in the position. Celeste says she'll put in a good word for her. Spoiler alert, it won't help. Then we have to go home to the Walsh house where Brandon is wearing another super shiny fucking chain. See that in visual aids, too. And a political discussion is taking place in clip number 7.
So I looked it up on the microfilm, and there it was. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, right on the front page of the New York Times. You should have seen what they wrote about him. You would have thought the guy had held up traffic on the Cumberland Trail just to get his beard trimmed.
should we explain that reference for the children, if they don't get it?
Sure. Okay, first of all, microfilm.
I know.
And I'm a little surprised this had already happened, but there was some, what was it, the $400 haircut?
Yeah.
That President Clinton, the first one, had on Air Force One, and it was like a big scandal because like everything they did was a big scandal back then. And so that's the reference to that. And they keep throwing in these like super, they think, topical political references, I guess, to convince us that he's a good candidate for progressive politics at the university level. And it's really just super dated. And also it's Brandon. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. The haircut would also come up again many years later when John Edwards got one too, but you know, he had his own problems anyway.
Oh yeah.
Brenda comes home from her life's very first day of job hunting, extremely dispirited, but also full of insights in clip number 2.
You know what I really hate? It takes just as much work to find a job and you don't even get paid for it.
Have you talked to Nat yet, Lavoine?
Come on, I do not want to be a singing waitress.
Well, what do you want?
I don't know. I just keep on worrying that we're going to get finished with all this education. There's still not going to be any jobs left for us.
I felt the same way when I was in college. And hey, look at me. You just have to have patience.
Stare. Stare.
Thanks, Dad.
She stares at him for so long. Like, he's had a job. Why don't you shut up and listen to him? Also, I'll take things freshmen say for 100, Alex. Like, ridiculous.
Yeah, well, but at this point, like, I was actually job hunting after college at this point, and there was fucking nothing. So I guess I get it. Like, compared to what we have more recently lived through, it didn't seem that bad, but...
Yeah.
It took me a year to get a job that wasn't from, like, a parent or a friend of a parent, so...
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
I get it. It's still not interesting, though, like...
No, it's not. Speaking of not interesting, Jim offers her a job in his office, but Brenda suddenly wants to do it on her own because she has so much integrity, question mark? Anyway... Then at school, she sees an ad for a job as a PA for a famous television producer. Brenda goes straight there, but the job is babysitting in the daycare, sad trombone. So Brenda then decides she's not as proud as she thought and ends up back in Jim's office. He blathers on about how great it is that she wants to get a job on her own, but whoops, she's there to try and get back the one that she refused. But he gives it to her anyway, and she can start immediately. Her first assignment is to deliver papers by 9 p.m. tonight. No problem. She's just going to run to this pool party at school first. What could go wrong? See, this is how you can tell Brenda's never had a job before. You don't need to drop the papers at 9. You could drop them now and then go to the party. Like, how dumb are you? Maybe you don't deserve a job. Anyway, so she goes to the pool party, which we'll hear about. But hours and hours and hours later, she returns to Cindy's station wagon, realizes it's after 9. She didn't deliver the documents. She literally had one job and didn't do it. Then she has to go home and creep into the kitchen and admit to Jim that she's a fucking idiot. Jim and his chest hair believe everyone is allowed to make a mistake and Brenda isn't fired. Hooray! Whatever. Believe it or not.
After the 17 times he paid to have Brandon's car fixed, it's like he can't really, like he should fire her, but he can't really when the other twin is sitting right there. So, yeah.
Right. And also she's like, can't you just fax them to her? And he's like, that's not the point, which it's not. But also this obviously is not that big a deal if he could. So whatever. Believe it or not, this is not the last we heard of Brenda's job. It will become an issue in future episodes connected to a very important person. But for now, let's move on to our D story, which is Nana can't escape Dan. So Donna and Andrea are in the same English class.
Sarah Dee Bunting story. Just kidding.
Donna and Andrea are taking the same English class. Dan is their TA. Andrea looks all disgruntled about it in their first class for some reason. Donna is in Andrea's room later working on their assignment, which, by the way, is a 10-sentence autobiography. Like, just whatever. When Dan rolls by offering to get them drinks, because Andrea is the oldest person in the world, she asks for a root beer. I don't know why that detail just strikes me so weird. Like, it would normally be Diet Coke. Like, I guess they couldn't say Coke, but root beer. Like, who drinks root beer? Why not sarsaparilla,
I
Grandma?
I know. I was just going to say sarsaparilla or birch beer. Yes. Which my actual Nana loved.
Aww. Oh,
boy. Yeah.
Anyway, he leaves, and then Donna wants to girl talk in clip number 3.
He is so cute. Hi, he's a teacher. Oh, excuse me, like that's ever stopped you before? Well, you went out with the drama teacher, and you were always flirting with Mr. Myers.
It wasn't that.
That was just in high school.
That was ancient history.
Oh, face it, Andrea. You like
something was ancient.
It is mean of them to give her that line under the circumstances.
It really is.
But also, that was ancient history. Like, you were flirting with Gil in episode 1 of this season. Let's not get crazy. Anyway, then Dan reads Andrea's autobio for the class in clip number 4.
Being accepted by Yale was probably the honor of which I was most proud. However, the responsibilities of money and family could not have been ignored. In conclusion, I have learned that what sometimes appears to be the most attractive alternative is not always the most appropriate one. Any comments? Well, it's obvious the student is very bright and she's worked very hard, but it doesn't sound like a human being wrote this, does it? I want your writing to sound like you, not what you think good writing should be. Here's another essay. See if you can hear the difference. Donna.
Yes?
I want you to read your essay for the class. Class, this is Donna Martin.
Bye. My first walking shoes are bronzed in my father's office. Sometimes I think that's how he wants to remember me. When I first started school, my mother bought me a pair of black patent leather Mary Janes. The other kids were all wearing Bucks, but my mother insisted that my Mary Janes were prettier. Finally, when I was in the fifth grade, I talked her into letting me have a pair of high purple suede boots. She said they made me look precocious, but I love them. In junior high, I bought a pair of Doc Martens. My father, who's a doctor, thought I was making fun of him. And after a big fight, they stayed in the closet.
Okay, that was already eight sentences. Like, where was this going? Like, that obviously is better writing than Andrea's, but still, like, how much more is there of the story?
Yeah, really. Maybe there were a lot of semicolons and she just was reading them like full stops.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That is a sneaky way to get around a 10-sentence restriction. Good point.
Yeah, we should also note that Dan had to, like, physically roll Andrea out of her room to get her to go to a party instead of working on this thing that was due in, like, a week.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, we'll
Andrea
hear,
stuff.
We'll hear again about this incredibly, the hard burden of this 10-sentence essay. But anyway, even though Andrea's writing is extremely stiff, obviously, Donna writes like a 10-year-old. But anyway, after class, Andrea is embarrassed in clip number 5.
So, you think my writing stinks, huh?
Yeah.
Not at all. The point of the assignment was to let me know who you are.
Well, I wrote about a very difficult decision.
Yes, and you made it seem like the easiest thing in the world. You hid behind your intelligence. You never revealed what goes on inside of you. What makes you unique?
I didn't want to make a fool of myself.
Well, I guess that's the chance you have to take. But until you're willing to risk it, you're never going to know who you are. You're never going to grow. You'll always be Andrea Zuckerman, West Beverly valedictorian. She's a smart girl. But who the hell is she? So, how are your table manners?
My what?
Would I be embarrassed going out to dinner with you?
No. My table manners are one of my best qualities.
Good. Then I'll see you tonight. Okay?
Is that supposed to be a charming way to ask someone out? Because it's kind of insufferable.
Yeah. Also, wait until the waiter asks what your mom would like to drink from the wine list. See how embarrassing it is then, Floofy.
I still think Dan is really cute. I felt bad when
he
had to.
He's cuter than I remembered.
He's cute. He's got a really cute
smile.
He
just turns into such a pill.
Well, they had to ruin him.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my whole, you know, I already said with the prom episode that I thought they were pointing towards Andrea and Brandon getting together until Gabrielle Carteris got pregnant for real and then they couldn't have made him the father. Similarly, Andrea is about to lose her virginity to Dan, spoiler alert, and I feel like when she got, Gabrielle Carteris got pregnant for real, they couldn't have it be like the first guy she slept with got her pregnant, so they had to like make him bad in retrospect so that she would have a reason to break up with him, and so the second guy she ever slept with got her pregnant instead. Like, I don't know. That's just my conspiracy theory about how that ended. Because he wasn't gross to begin with. They had to, like, retroactively gross him up so that she would have a reason to dump him, I think.
Yeah, and be with... What's his face? It all went so horribly wrong.
It did. I mean, especially compared to Jesse, Dan is way cuter, in my opinion. Hair notwithstanding. I mean, hair is a bad point of comparison for the two of them. But anyway, we're getting so far
sure
ahead of ourselves. That's the end of that storyline. Moving on to our C plot. Steve is a dog. Steve is very offended at having been asked to read 2 chapters in his textbook. I'm surprised he's taking any classes that have textbooks, frankly. since we're with Steve, how are things going with Celeste? I'm so glad you asked. Clip number 6.
Bran, I don't think it's such a good idea that Brenda works at Maxwell's.
I thought Celeste liked working there.
She does, but the thing is, I'm gonna break up with her.
Why would you break up with Celeste, man? She's a gorgeous girl. She's a great chick. You guys had a great summer together. What's the problem?
Chick?
Look around, Brandon. I don't think this is a time for us to be tied down.
So when are you gonna lay this on her?
I'm gonna tell her tonight.
Do you have any idea it's coming?
Probably not. Don't go easy on her, man. Yeah, I'm a sensitive guy. What's that?
That was Brandon making a gesture that made it seem like he doesn't believe Steve is a sensitive guy, which I only left that in because Ian's earrings reading on that line made me laugh. I love this storyline, too, for Steve. Like, I don't want to be with Celeste because I might want to fuck other people. Like, okay, I don't know. It seems like a weird pretext, but on the other hand, it is Steve. So anyway.
Well, and at least they have him just like put it out there,
yeah,
as it were.
True. When Brenda sees Celeste at the store, she mentions this pool party that's coming up for freshmen, and Celeste gets all pissy about it because Steve never told her about it. But later, she is then fooling around with him in his glass brick bedroom and doesn't bring it up. And doesn't act mad with him at all, so dunno. Anyway, they talk about how they met. He tries to drop hints that he's getting ready to dump her ass, but then she indicates a willingness to bone, and he decides to do that instead. The next day, Brandon asks how Celeste took the breakup. Steve says he handled it with finesse, but then they run into a very flirty Leslie, and after discussing the pool party, she leaves, and we get this clip number 8.
God! How could I say that?
What are you worried about? You're a free man.
Not quite.
Not only did I not break up with Celeste, I invited her to the pool party.
Steve, I thought you were going to break up with her.
I tried.
You know, you're right, Steve. You are a hell of a sensitive guy.
By the way, I should have said this earlier. Don't make yourself a drinking game with the words pool party, because you will have to go to the hospital. How much they discuss this pool party is unbelievable.
And it's not something I would ever have gone to.
No.
Like, it's a freshman class event. Like, that's... Those aren't where you go.
No.
There's not going to be any booze at a college-sponsored event. Why would you go to that?
In the middle of the afternoon at the outdoor
pool on
campus.
Also, does it look like it's in the courtyard of the school?
Yes.
And they just dug a pool? No, like the courtyard of their old school at West Beverly.
Yeah, could be. Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I mean, it's possible that high school has a pool. It was a big school. Anyway,
yeah.
We're thinking way
returning
too much about
for
this.
A moment to Brandon.
Yes.
Shut up, Brandon. You're not Celeste's lawyer.
No, you're not. And it gets even worse when Celeste shows up for the pool party in time to see Steve pool flirting with Leslie, and Brandon is helpful in clip number 9.
Listen, Celeste, if you're going to keep getting jealous, Steve's going to drive you crazy. You know how he is.
Okay, a couple of things. One, Steve is just going to flirt with other women and you have to make your peace with it. What? He's like physically throwing Leslie around the pool. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's out of line for Celeste to make a face at it. Second, for Celeste's reaction to be like, I know. Like, no, you can tell Steve to not do that. It's okay. You're dating him.
Ugh. Well, and if he's going to be a horn dog, like, fine. But there's like, being a horn dog, which Steve is, mm-hmm. that's fine. You want to be able to contain that. But
right.
Like, if he's putting hands on people in their bathing suits, then you're allowed to draw a line.
I think
he won't stay behind it. You're allowed to dump him because you look exactly like Diane Cannon.
Yes.
And you do better.
Yeah, for real. But ugh. Celeste decides that the way she's going to react at this point is to throw a beach ball at him and then stomp away. And when we join back up with them, he apparently has just been ignoring her this whole time because the party is continuing. And for some reason, she's just sitting there waiting for him to pay attention to her. Don't get it. Finally, when we cut back to them several scenes later, she has caught her snap and is taking off. She figures that he's getting ready to dump her because he can't actually let her go for someone else, I guess he tries to fight her on it, even though that's what he said he wanted at the beginning of the episode. Figure it out, Steve. That night in the Walsh kitchen table, Brandon and Jim and Steve are all discussing this. Steve realizes he fucked up and that he thinks he might be in love with her. And then we get this discussion in clip number 10.
And why do you act the way you do? Sometimes I follow my heart and everything's okay. And then Mr. Green Jeans has his own ideas. You know, I bet if you...
Wait.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Green Jeans?
Yeah, this is where we learn Steve has named his cock, and the name he gave it is a character from Captain Kangaroo.
A beloved children's show. Appropriate. Mr.
Sorry, I gotta start that clip over again. I killed it.
And why do you act the way you do? Sometimes I follow my heart and everything's okay. And then Mr. Green Jeans has his own ideas. You know, I bet if you went to Celeste,
and just admitted to her that you were a horse's ass, she might forgive you.
Admit that you're a horse's ass? I don't think that's going to work.
Let's not rule it out. Also, horse's ass is a really underrated insult that I'm going to put back in my regular rotation as of now.
Uh-huh.
It's such a dad thing to say. I love it.
It really is. And it's like horse shit instead of bullshit.
Yes.
Like there's just something, they're like different a little bit. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Horse shit is definitely one of my dad's words, and I feel a kinship with him whenever I use it. Moving on. Steve goes to apologize to Celeste at her store, and she looks very, very sad. And she's a nice girl, and he's a shithead. I really feel bad for her. I don't think Jennifer Grant is a great actress, but she definitely sells like how heartbroken Celeste is about how Steve is acting.
Yeah.
He promises.
And they're very cute. Like, I don't understand why she couldn't just go there. Well, whatever. Soap opera.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. It would have been very easy for them to like just make her already a student there. It is weird that they didn't. I mean, obviously they wanted him to play the field and stuff, but whatever. He promises that he'll never hurt her again, which he definitely will. But for now, they are still together. Moving on to our B plot, in which we learn graveyard shifts make you tired. Donna is exhausted from the radio show. Apparently got less than 2 hours sleep before her first day of school. By the way, I want to say for the record, this whole storyline is like so out of the realm of possibility for anything I would ever do that like the entire time I'm like, just quit. You can't sacrifice sleep. Literally nothing is more important than sleep. I will say that until the day I die of exhaustion. Anyway, she goes in to wake up David in his gross boy pit of a bedroom, which I took a screenshot of for the visual aids because it grossed me out so much. He's got on like a mattress on the floor because Mel apparently, in addition to screwing up his payment for his tuition, also couldn't buy him a bed frame. But he won't get up, but he promises he'll get there later. David is prepping a playlist for the radio show. Donna is agreeable, but doesn't really care. And a fight ensues in clip 11.
Donna, we're supposed to be doing this together. How come you never help me with any of our playlists?
David, I'm sorry. I just can't take it anymore. I'm not a night person, and lately I'm not a day person either. The show's driving me crazy.
It'll get better, you'll see. We just have to prove ourselves.
I can't.
Donna, as soon as Howard sees that he can count on us, he'll give us a day shift.
Look, David, maybe things come easier for you. But with all this reading, I'm going to fall behind.
Well, can you just hang in there?
I don't know.
So what do you want to do?
I'm going to go see Howard tomorrow. And I'm going to quit.
Donna, he hired us as a team.
I'm sorry, David.
So what are you saying? You can't hack it, so the hell with me?
No.
Well, that's what it sounds like.
Well, that's not what I'm doing.
Whatever.
David, don't be angry. Look, I'll do the show with you tonight. But that's the last one.
Listen, don't do me any favors, okay?
These two. I mean, I will say it is kind of crappy of Donna if she has already decided to quit to not have, like, said this to David first before he had to bring it up and then, like, push her into admitting it. But also, it's 2 to 6 a.m. Neither of you should be doing it, clearly.
Well, and I know it's college radio, like the idea of doing this now, like I'm, you know, trying not to yawn just thinking about it, but like I stayed up all night all the time and it was fine because I was 18.
Right.
But even in college radio, they make someone different do it every night. So your sleep is only boned for one night a week. Like there's no way they would have to do it every single day. That's not how life works.
Right. Yeah. Like, they're not getting paid to screw up their circadian rhythms. Like, they are still being expected to go to class. So, all of this is crazy. Anyway, the next day, Donna asks Andrea if she thinks that Donna is selfish and explains about having told David about quitting the show. Andrea asks why she's doing it, and we hear clip 12.
Oh, I'm just so tired. I'm walking into walls. David's sleeping all the time. He doesn't even go to classes, and then he makes me feel like I'm being a wimp for not being able to keep up with him.
Well, the one thing I learned from my short stint on the campus paper is that these people really take what they do seriously. So if you want to make it, you're going to have to commit.
I just don't know if I want it that much. Not like David.
That's what you have to go on.
Let's all go crazy.
Your short stint on the campus paper.
Thank you.
You didn't even fucking turn in your tryout.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Let's not be crazy throwing the word stint around like it doesn't mean anything. Like you did not have one of those.
There was no stint.
There was not. So Donna goes to Howard's office while he's on the phone yelling at someone. When he hangs up, she follows him through the station trying to explain why she's quitting. But instead, he parks her in a seat at a mic because his afternoon host flaked and she needs to cover. And there's literally no one else in the whole office in the middle of the day who could do this other than this inexperienced freshman. But sure. Okay. But when the show is over, it turns out she nailed it, and we hear this, clip 13.
From now on, this is your shift.
Oh, this is great! David's gonna be so excited, but I'm so frustrated with the night shift.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I can't bring David along with you.
But we're a team.
I still need him on the 2 to 6.
But he's my boyfriend.
That's your problem. You did great, Donna. Thank you so much. I'll see you tomorrow. Okay. Keep up the good work.
That is her problem for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, you're a very good judge of character, Howard, if you figured that out and just having met David once or twice. Anyway, at the pool party, shit gets awkward when Donna introduces David to a couple of her new sorority sisters who, by the way, are like so mumsy. One of them looks like Edie McClurg in She's Having a Baby, if you've ever seen that movie. Like, not that she, not heavy wise, but like the same haircut, same styling. They both look so elderly.
Oh, geez. That's, yep.
See it in the visual aids. Tell me I'm right. Anyway, they have this discussion, clip 14.
Wait a minute, am I hearing an echo or something? Were you on the radio this afternoon?
Yeah, was that you?
Uh-huh. I didn't know you had your own radio show.
Neither did I.
Oh, she was so great. Like the way you handled those requests. Like that guy I called in for Megadeth.
Oh, and the bit that you did about having to clean up for your roommates was hysterical.
Yeah, really. God, it sounds like you're living with a bunch of slobs.
excuse us for 1 second. Look, David, I never called you a slob.
No, I don't care about that. I thought you said you were gonna quit.
I was.
Then how'd you get on the air again?
The DJ that was supposed to be there never showed up, and before I knew it was happening, Howard had me in the booth on the air.
So does that mean we get the day shift?
I don't know how to break this to you, but it's not we. It's more like me.
What? I thought we were a team.
I tried to tell Howard that.
Well, obviously you didn't try hard enough.
David, I didn't do that to you on purpose.
Then why'd you do it at all?
Maybe I'm not selfish.
It's funny that the question of Donna's selfishness keeps coming up in this episode because David is like the most selfish person on the show. Like, the fact that he's trying to turn this around on her is kind of ridiculous.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's one thing for him to be like, wounded that Howard didn't think that he should come along or that he couldn't find someone else. But it's like, you could find someone else to take the 2 to 6. There's a lot of thirsty freshmen that will do anything and take some whatever trucker pills and they'll stay up and do it.
That's
one thing. But it's like, you hate everything that Donna does. You resent her nonstop.
Yeah.
Just dump her and get it in.
Right. Like considering how much they talk about, like, you know, how he hates all the stuff that she does on the radio. Everything we see on the show shows that she's actually better as a broadcaster than he is. Like, she's got better instinct. She's better on like improvising. And people like her more. And he's an annoying pill who's like trying too hard to be cool all the time. And that's probably why he's not getting anywhere in life. Anyway, also,
or in his pants, or in Mr. Green Jeans world.
Yeah. Anyway,
excuse me. He would be Mr. Girl Jeans, as you will have seen in her visual aids.
True.
Had the exact same pair.
The other thing is, like, David is obsessed with getting onto the radio show, and yet he wasn't listening this afternoon to hear that she was on it. Whatever. He then refuses to join her in the pool party dance contest. The greatest betrayal imaginable. And then there's only one cure for David's blues, and it's entering the dance contest with Brenda, which they do. There's a lot in the visual aids.
While
of, like,
Donna is standing around looking all like broody perfume ad for some reason, like she has no expression on her face, but we're supposed to think she's really like bummed out.
Yeah.
Watching him dance with Brenda.
But she sends Brenda to dance with him. Like, I don't know if we're supposed
Try turning the edges of your mouth down to simulate a frown. That's generally how it's done, no?
Yeah, I don't, I'm not sure what we're supposed to think she's thinking, she's feeling either, that like she's proud of herself for so selflessly giving him Brenda to dance with instead so that he won't be sad anymore. Like, whatever. The show exactly. didn't care to make this clear, so why are we? Anyway.
Exactly.
Please go to the visual aids to see all the many ways that people embarrass themselves at this party, from David's gross, like, angry dance faces to Kelly's sad mom clapping while holding hands with Dylan to Andrea with her hands over her head, way too excited. It all goes on
to Shannon Doherty's exactly one dance move, which we have seen in every mm-hmm. single scene, starting with Dead Scott's party, going on to the squash it, not squash it, the
Pigskin prom.
Shaw episode.
Yep.
It's just like this random sideways, like lateral hip thing mm-hmm. that, okay.
Yeah.
Good luck.
It's very little foot movement, a lot of hips and a lot of squatting. You've seen it. If you watch the show, you know exactly what we're talking about. Anyway,
this the Sarah D. Bunting story.
This goes on for an unimaginably long time, but finally, Brenda and David win, and an epidemic of fully dressed pool pushings ensues, because that's what happens at a pool party on TV. Cheered by his victory, David decides to stop being mad at Donna, which is great, because it means we get to hear her terrible, terrible, terrible laugh in clip 15. People's bad affected laughs is like one of my biggest peeves, and that one is terrible. That like goat bleat that she does, it's so fake. Ugh. The worst. Anyway, later David admits to Donna that being on the radio is the one thing that keeps him from sliding back into season one geekdom, and she tells him he's cool. Not true. Donna then nicely comes to the station later to keep David company on his shift, because she's going to be up half the night anyway working on her 10-sentence assignment. I know what you're thinking. What other assignment did she get? Because in no way does it take half the night to write the 10 sentences Dan assigned. You're right, but that is the one that she's talking about. Anyway, turns out Howard has to take back Donna's afternoon slot because the DJ she was covering for was changed her mind, and what do you know? That's Howard's girlfriend. David offers to let Donna back on his
Mrs.
show,
Meth.
But she's not interested as girlfriend Meth. Moving on to our A plot. Great, a new love triangle for Dylan and Kelly. This gets real creepy, guys. Kelly is reading on the deck when John Sears shows up with flowers. She is very creeped out given how flirty she was with him the last time. Doesn't know how he found out where she lives. Bad time to have a ground floor apartment. And you might think that he asked Steve where she lives or looked her up in the student directory to find her or something. But no. Clip 16.
I hope you don't mind. I followed you home.
You followed me?
It's the only way I could figure out how to find you. I wanted to give you these.
They're beautiful.
Nah, they're all right.
Thank you. But I thought I told you at the party I already have a boyfriend.
Yeah, Dylan. See what a good memory I have?
Very impressive.
Look, Kelly, I want you to know that I respect the fact that you're in a relationship.
Good.
But I also want you to know that I don't give up easily.
Okay.
Especially when it's worth it. So, I hope this has cleared up any misunderstandings that we've had.
Oh, God. Like, Kelly seems to think she goes from thinking it's creepy that he has just suddenly appeared on her deck to thinking it's romantic that he followed her home, as opposed to, like... Like, obviously he knows this is not okay if he didn't just come up to her when he saw her and be like, can I walk you home? Instead, hanging back.
Yeah.
Like the stalker he is.
Well, and he has her pegged as that, like, insecure sort who initially thinks that that's, like, romantic and
right.
flattering.
Right.
When actually it's really gross and a violation of every boundary. Mm-hmm. With that said, mm-hmm. with the understanding that John Sears is disgusting and anything he's doing is not okay.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
The line reading of, yeah, Dylan.
Great.
He's like that little squeef. And
seriously.
Then later when Dylan is like super glare flexing on him at the pool party and John Sears is like, I'm barely not laughing in your face.
I know. Yes.
Oh, God. Like, it's no contest between those two. Like, even if he's a stalker, I'd just be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. The other, I mean, it's true. Kelly loves the drama, and he, you, as you said, he somehow has like sniffed this out about her because she's way into it. But also, like,
yeah,
you can't be like, I respect the fact that you're in a relationship, but I'm going to keep hitting on you. Like, no, one or the other. Like, if you're going to keep hitting on her, that means you don't respect the fact that she's in a relationship, which you don't have to, but don't say you do. Anyway, proof that he was not lying. The next thing we see is him creeping on Kelly at school in clip 17.
Look who's here. The most beautiful girl in the freshman class.
Hello, John.
Oh, hello, dear. What's happening?
I'm just waiting for my boyfriend.
Well, if you were my girlfriend, I wouldn't keep you waiting for anything.
Oh, I bet you wouldn't.
So am I going to see you later at the freshman pool party?
Since when are you a freshman?
You know, I don't think they're going to be checking for IDs at this thing, Kelly.
I think so. Here comes Dylan.
I'm only leaving so I don't have to share you with anyone.
I just want to comment on the face Dave made at the beginning of that clip. So it made me laugh.
Well, he was
grossed out.
You know, here we are at the... the continuing, like, Kelly, our generation's great beauty. Like, she's fine. But let's throttle it back.
It's gross because he combines that weird sort of, like, inexperienced, you know, suitor who has already in his mind figured out all the paths to victory.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already in his head at step 8. Like, he's going to go from 1 to 8 in a day. Introduction to... you know, being boyfriend and girlfriend, but combining that sort of patheticness with this overconfidence that apparently he gets from being like an older student or whatever else is going on. Right. I don't know if this guy looks like or anything like that, but like it's
like a grown up man. Yeah. Dylan could fit into one pant leg.
By the way,
John Sears' pants.
Paul Johansson went to my gym in LA and he is a giant man. Like he is like a door. He is huge.
There is a reason that like once you notice it, and I saw this confirmed somewhere, but once you notice it, like he is consistently like sitting down,
yep,
leaning on something.
On like, a lower
he is
step.
A full foot. Yeah, taller than even most of the dudes. And then he's taller even than Ian Ziering, who is not,
he's not short. Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, Johansson, oh my God. Like he's in so many like properties that I love. Like, what was the name of his character in Soap Dish? Comes running, he's like, I was at the gym when I heard you needed a brain transplant. Bolt? Was that his name?
That sounds right. Let me look it up. he's also best known. He has gone down in history because he went on to be one of the dads or the dad on One Tree Hill. And so in that clip, Dave, remember when we used to watch The Soup and they would always show that clip of the dog taking the donor heart?
That was just on
King of the Mountain. Yeah, I know.
It really is what a TV greatest.
You are correct.
What the fuck moments.
Yes, yeah. It was. Anywho.
Like, it really is a triumph of how did that get past so many people and make it to TV? Like, it really is like one of humanity's greatest group efforts, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
From the show that also brought us Stay Out of This, Nick Lachey. Also an important The Soup clip that got played a lot. Anyway, Dylan shows up all excited about a writer who's going to be on campus. This guy, Emil Brewster. Who is that? I'm so glad you asked. Clip 18.
The biography on Kerouac that I've been reading?
Sarah.
It's just like, if there were a contest, like, what should Dylan say in this scene that is super Dylan-y and will, like, set up the conflict between Kelly, who wants to be social and go to this goofy freshman pool party,
mm-hmm,
and Dylan, who wants to brood and be Dylan-y?
Mm-hmm.
What is Dylan's scheduling conflict? And this was the contest winner. And mm-hmm, it is a perfect, like, diamond of Dylan-ness.
Yeah. It's true.
Like he's read all the Kerouac,
mm-hmm,
and now it's the biography. And okay, it's not biography on Kerouac, by the way, writers.
Right.
It's not how we say things.
No, it's not. Also, you
but
know,
I love also that he's like, you know, that biography that I've been reading, instead of presumably touching you, paying attention to you, giving you anything that you want, or enjoying beer. Yeah. Probably has like 650 pages. And he brings it everywhere he goes and like womps it down on the counter at the Peach Pit all performatively.
Make sure he holds it up so that you can see the cover and be impressed by it so that you know he's not reading Harry Potter or something. Yeah. I mean, not that Harry Potter was out then. Also, you know, someone in the writer's room was like, why don't we say Jack Kerouac's on campus? And someone else was like, he's dead. Anyway,
you can, but then we're into frat pranks and it gets kind of weird.
So this Emil Brewster is speaking on campus at the same time as the pool party, because of course he is. So Dylan tells her she should go to the party, and then it's time for another installment of the great debate about whether he has to do things she wants him to in clip 19.
Look, Cal, you go to the pool party, I'll go to the lecture, and we'll meet up after.
You can be so selfish sometimes. It's just like France all over again, isn't it? You wrapped up in your little world, leaving me out in the cold.
No, this isn't like France. All your friends are here.
Fine. I will go with David and Zana.
My point exactly.
You just don't care, do you?
What?
About what?
You know what? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about me. Don't worry about us. As far as I'm concerned, you don't have to worry about anything.
And then she lights his car on fire and walks away from it in slow-mo while wearing a bustier? I don't think so.
I had to leave that music cue on. It had the exact reaction from Dave that I wanted it to, which was like he started like a mouse ran over his foot or something.
Kind of felt like that guy in the old Memorex or Maxwell, whatever it was, tape commercial. Sitting in the chair getting blown away by the...
Yes.
Yeah. And then his chair starts moving. Yeah. Yeah, right before that, she really like gets the biggest Kelly Bray that we've, I think, ever heard. She's like, I want us to go together. Like, well, even if he were inclined to buckle and go to this pool party, if I were him, after that tone, forget it.
Also, again, it's a fucking pool party. It's not like he's blowing off dinner with her dad. Like, who cares? It's today's party. You know what's going to happen tomorrow? Another fucking party. Like, pick and choose. Choose your spots. Which ones are important? The 4 p.m. pool party? Is it that important to you? No. Anyway, Kelly shows up at the pool party alone.
The 7:30 p.m. pool party? That's different.
I'm just saying, like, especially when we see it, like you said, like, you know, there's a bin of like not Pepsis and people are having hot dogs and standing around a pool and half of them aren't even in swimsuits. Like, who cares? Anyway, Kelly shows up at the stupid pool party alone and runs straight into John Sears. Of course, she's all smiles because he likes to do things. And then Dylan shows up just in time to glare at John and Kelly dressing a hot dog. Not a euphemism. Dylan and John are reintroduced. And though you can't hear Dylan ignoring John Sears' outstretched hand in this clip, well, maybe you actually can. Here's clip 20.
You remember John Sears from West Beverly?
Not really.
Nice to meet you. Kelly and I were just talking about you. And here I am. Well, it's nice to see you. So tell me, which frat house are you going to pledge to?
Crack house.
Ooh. Great. I'll see you guys later.
We could have a fight right now, but that's not why you came, is it?
No, the only reason I'm here is to be with you.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad, too.
Okay. Again, John Sears is a terrible person and is about to become terribler in ways that we will see in the coming episodes. However, the fact that he doesn't give Dylan what he wants when Dylan's like, crack house, is kind of hilarious. Like,
I know. He's just like, great.
Okay, I don't care.
Bye.
Like, Dylan is hoping he's going to get all offended. Like, I don't care. But also, at the end of this clip, what happens, which you can see in the visual aids, is that Dylan kisses Kelly but keeps eyes on John Sears across the party, like, who is the bigger creep in this moment, I ask you. In this moment, that is, the creepier moment is yet to come right now, as John Sears shows up on Kelly's deck again like a fucking creep in our final clip.
What are you doing here?
You know what I'm doing here. And don't say any more about Dylan. You keep telling me I have a boyfriend. But you never tell me to go away.
Good point.
And you never tell me to leave you alone.
Yes, I do.
Maybe you think you do. Just give me one chance, Kelly.
He kisses her. And she kisses him. Wah, wah.
And during this silent portion, her lips were extending towards his, like, iron filings to a magnet. Like, the cat butt mouth was, like, extending like she was drinking out of a straw. The straw in his pants, that is.
She had prolapsed cat butt. Yes, complete.
Oh, God.
Sorry. I'm actually not sorry. I don't know why I said that. I am. I thought that was a pretty good line. Yeah.
I am dead now.
You can see it in the visual aids. How the, she, her eyes are like, Anyway.
I am dead.
Kelly, you need to make up your mind. But maybe she just did. I guess we'll find out in the next episode. But for now, let's wrap it up with our MVP.
Yes, let's.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. Well, it's
John
not-
Sears. I mean, he needs to start wearing a belt, but he's not the only one in the cast. I don't know why they won't give them belts. Danny Drennan used to harp on this all the time. I do not get it, especially when you tuck a shirt into pleated khakis. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. John Sears is terrible, but as a one-off, I would... Good looking guy. Hair dye is a little weird. Good looking guy. And the way he is withering about Dylan, like he literally doesn't give a shit. He's like, yeah,
he
Dylan.
It's I true. Mean,
and also there's no one else. Like who else would I pick? Dan?
I don't know. I'm going to give it
actually,
to Donna.
Actually, Dan's sort of tempting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say my MVP for this episode is Donna again. Because she smokes the alleged journalist Andrea in the creative writing assignment. She understands enough about her own schedule and the limitations of what she can handle to quit the radio show, which is the sensible thing to do, David. Other than that laugh, she doesn't really do anything that pisses me off. So Donna is my pick. And LBB.
Is this the, and she's wearing a cute, like it's super 90s. It's like cutoffs and a belly shirt. And
oh,
like
yeah, yeah.
Blades,
the stripe, that stripy shop top. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she's like, she looks really good this year. Like, this is right before she gets the helmet. So
yeah.
This is like the last of Donna looking like someone from Earth One.
It's true. Although there is also, I hate to say it, but I had to do it. There's a shot in the visual aids of her face head on and her nose is crazy. I mean, I know it's not the nose she was born with. However, I hope someone got sued or that it was a discount job because
yeah,
some bad rhinoplasty happening. Real bad. LVP. Not Donna's plastic surgeon. I'm going to give it to Kelly because I just think she's being ridiculous in every possible way, both in the way that she's haranguing Dylan and also the way she's stringing along John and kind of being an asshole about it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm sort of torn. Brandon is relatively not that shitty for him in this episode, and although Steve is sort of shitty, he gets away with it, and it's Steve being really Stevie. So I'm gonna say Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the like glaring at John Sears, like this person is literally three times your mass.
It's true.
Four times if you take those Doc Martens off and shut the fuck up about Kerouac.
It's
stop
true.
Being a pill.
Luke Perry is like the size of one of Paul Johansson's legs. Like he's so tiny compared to him. Anyway, speaking of Dylan, let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Five ways in this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. It's fucking dangerous to know someone who talks about Kerouac because they will bore you to actual death. That's one.
Yes. Could drop that biography on your toe and break it. That's bad and dangerous.
Shows up at a pool party in a t-shirt and jeans, which is just bad. It's a pool party, dude.
And is probably wearing Docs a la Brenda. Thinks he can flex on a guy who is 3 to 4 times his mass. Dangerous. And mad.
Yeah, he's just mad in a lot of the episode because Kelly won't get off his jock. Again, as we've been saying for probably the last 20 episodes since they got together, they are a bad couple and should break up.
Yeah. I mean, now he'll be interested again because she'll want to be with someone else, so...
Oh, yeah, of course.
This is the only... This is... Their whole relationship is the drama. They don't actually...
Yes.
We didn't really know each other.
And the worst part is that he thinks he's above the drama, and he so is not at all.
Yeah, he is the drama.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. This is time. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. Now we are still in the love life chapter, but now we're talking about bachelor number two, Dean Factor. The first 6 months, the couple...
Oh, R.A.P. Foofus.
Yeah, he's gone, sorry. The first 6 months the couple spent together saw only the occasional loud argument, according to Factor. The problems began the night of March 10th, 1993, when Factor and Doherty had a heated discussion at the actress's home. When Factor made a move to leave, Shannon turned violent. She commenced hitting, kicking, and scratching me, Factor revealed in a statement for the LAPD. Doherty calmed down and offered to drive him home. Factor agreed, but thought it was a mistake at the time. Shannon drove dangerously fast, as we've already heard, and Factor, no doubt seeing his life flash before him, asked her to pull over. She refused to do so. I punched her in the arm, hoping to make her stop. This had the desired effect, and she stopped the car. When I got out of the car, she did the same and began to physically strike me. Finally, I had no means of avoiding the punishment and slapped her across the face in order to make her stop. This had the desired effect. Shannon stopped striking me, returned to her car, and sped away. Most people would take the cue for a hasty departure, but Factor instead viewed it as a green light on his highway of love. Although the incident shook Factor up, it wasn't enough to stop him from letting Shannon move into his home 9 days later. It wasn't long before he discovered that the price of these new living arrangements was more than he'd intended to pay. Utilities not included. I'm going to leave it on that cliffhanger.
Speaking of things that come through the pipes, 40-year-old virgin no more. Next time, the world's oldest living freshman gives it up to Dan, while elsewhere, Kelly gives Dylan the gate, or does she? Jim gives his daughter a sweeps plot by introducing her to Stuart, and David gives zero fucks about housework at the beach house. We've got a whole stack of dirty dishes in our visual aids at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and you can follow me on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Tara Ariano, my fine co-host, is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And let's not forget our producer, David T. Cole. He's on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the...